Good morning. My name is Ronald White, and I'm an alcoholic. I want to be sure that I thank this community for giving my brother and I such a warm reception and showing up. You know, when we first looked at the program, at least when I first looked at the program and I saw that we were closing up at 8:30 on Sunday, I was wondering, you know, well, who's going to be there? You know, because we'll be speaking alone, you know, to each other or something. Because normally I go to a lot of these deals, and Sunday is where everybody's, you know, it's getaway day, and a lot of folks have to catch fly or do whatever they got to do. And so Sunday is usually sparse for the closing speaker. And so to have a workshop at 8:30 is really gratifying and heartening to see so many people who are hungry for sobriety. And, you know, to see all of you here, it's overwhelming. Again, I don't like to make it look like we're patting each other on the back or touting, you know, one another and stuff, but, oh, we've had some great speakers this weekend. And, yeah. Bill Cleveland last night was on fire. I mean, I have seen Bill many times and have enjoyed him every time, but last night. Yes, yes. You know, and I am so glad Alcoholics Anonymous has never been about can you top this. That it's never been a competition between our members about, you know, who's got the best story, who can do this or what. Because I will be very intimidated, you know, by, like, the people that I've heard share and stuff. But instead of being intimidated, I've been fed. You know, and it's, again, fueled me to continue to do what I've been taught to do, which is carry this message. And, you know, I'm going to take about, I need to time myself. I want to see where I got started because we've got about 75 minutes, and I'm going to take about 35, and I'm going to try to leave a little meat on the bone for my brother. Let him close it out, give you that last 40. Hopefully have some of y'all in the aisles, you know, just, like I said, woo! You know, just, you know, all of that. However you express your spirituality, okay. And in sharing yesterday, I remember leaving off, I just talked about step 6 and 7, talking about having examined those character defects that arise that I become aware of after having done that fourth step and that fifth step with a sponsor or a trusted friend. And after having shared that and having examined those things and having gotten on my knees and prayed to ask God to remove each and every one of them, I'm sure everybody in here does that, right? Ask God to remove each and every one of them, right? And having done that, the process, as Bill mentioned last night, the process of trying to change my character, trying to get rid of those character defects, is actually done through amends. The amends process is the most powerful one, one of the most powerful processes in the whole entire 12-step process that I know of. In our meetings in California, oftentimes at the end of the meeting, they read the promises. I don't know if they do that here in Tennessee. They read the promises out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And those promises are contained in the chapter called Into Action. The promises occur, according to the book, after having done my ninth step. It's the ninth step promises. There are promises actually throughout the entire Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Actually, usually after each step, if you look very carefully in the book, each one of them, there's something that I'm promised to receive if I've done each one of those steps as outlined in the book. And many people are, I'm getting these promises now, 30 days sober. And they start to, and you do get a lot of shit. Stop drinking and you automatically receive some benefits, right? Because those negative consequences start to stop. And so you start just receiving, you get to go to sleep at night. You don't just pass out. You know, you get to get up and all of those. So in terms of the promises, the 12 promises that come after the ninth step, they're very powerful promises. And if you look at them in the book, they are directly connected with the action of amends. And amends are probably one of the most daunting things. In the big book, it's probably more written on how to conduct an amends than any other step in the book, other than the first step. The first step, they write forever on that because they know how hard my head is. And they know how I don't really want to surrender to the fact of how powerless I am. So they repeat, wash, rinse, repeat, you know, over and over in the book to make sure that I am convinced that I am powerless. Because they know after you get in here, being here for a while, in the very beginning, I had no doubt about the fact that after that guy kicked my ass in front of my mama, left me for dead, and when I checked into the Harbor Light, the very next day, I had no doubt in my mind that I was powerless. After I had been in that recovery home, however, for about 2 weeks, how they gonna talk to me that way? You know, like they had invited me, right? You know, it doesn't, they don't have half the education I am with my good lawyer ass in the recovery home, right? You know, right? Amazing the ego that I possess, the ego of the alcoholic, you know, and it knows that that's what stands in between me and the spiritual experience. And so it's all about the destruction, the reduction of my ego so that I can allow God, listen to me, so that I can allow God, so that God can then work in my life so that I don't block the experience. And so that's what amends is about also. Amends is one of the most humbling processes. It's one of the most courageous processes. It starts to imbue in me characteristics that I don't possess, that I don't know I possess. I actually do, but I really am not aware of that fact. I must be fearless. I must be thorough. I must be humble. The book goes into great details to talk about the kind of attitude I'm to have when I go out to do the amends. It talks about how I'm supposed to be calm, how I'm supposed to be, I can't be argumentative, that I can't point out the other person's defect, no matter how glaring they might be. It starts to outline for me all of the things that I need to do in my life, right? Just in everyday living. You see, the book always tricks me anyway, you know, because it starts to train me on how to be a good human being. Imagine that. And the amends process is the best process for doing that. The book starts off talking about going to the enemy. Talks about that being that person. How do I go to the man that I've once hated? How do I go to that person that I really, he the last person I want to make an amends to? That is the, and it says, I probably will get more benefits from going to that person than I do to a friend. Because, it's, you know, you go to a friend, you're not really that scared. I'm going to mama and everything. But I don't know about y'all. The book may not. There's so many paradoxes in the book because things that seemingly say one thing seem to mean another. When I made my amends to my mother, and I need to tell you guys a little bit. I don't know if Ralph and I went into detail about, you know, our relationship with our mother and the kind of woman she is. She's a phenomenal woman. Normally when I share my story, I get to go into detail about that. This woman who had this alcoholic husband raising 6 boys in South Central Los Angeles, and then she put him out when I was 9 years old. I remember I had on my first resentment list about how our father left us and all this stuff. My mother put his ass out. Okay. You know. And like most drunks, you know, I had a resentment that he left us, and then I had also had a resentment that he wasn't there. You know, I was glad he left, and then I was mad that he left. Didn't want him there, and then wanted him there. Anybody else like me? Can't ever please me, right? Get rid of his ass, and then why wasn't he here for sports night, you know, at high school? But my mother put him out when I was about 9 years old or thereabouts because he seemed to be causing more trouble than he was worth. And so she decided she was going to raise 6 boys by herself at the time, a mother who was on welfare. And she wasn't satisfied with doing that because she wanted more for her and her boys. So what she started doing is she got a job cooking and cleaning for other people's families where she would get up very early in the morning, about 5-something in the morning or whatever, so she would catch the bus to take care of these other people. But before she left, she made sure that her boys were fed, they had breakfast, made sure that we had our clothes for school, made sure that we never went hungry. And while she was doing that, she was also working on getting a high school diploma, because this was a woman who didn't have a high school diploma. So she's going to night school to get a high school diploma. After she come home and she cook dinner for us, then she go to school. And she's working on getting this high school diploma. And when she finished doing that, and this is, mind you, she has time for little side things, like she was president of the PTA, and she was in church every Sunday morning, having us in church every Sunday morning, and during the week going not only to church on Sunday, but we go to BTU on Tuesday, and then choir rehearsal on Wednesday, and then Bible study on Thursday. Like we go to meetings. See, I remember Ralph was talking about how he'd hate, you don't have to worry about him going to church once he turns 16 or whatever. Because I used to wonder, why do they go to church so much? I'm in meetings all the time. Because I'm seeking the spiritual experience. That's what I know now, that that's what my mother has been seeking all of her life. And after she got that high school diploma, which she did get, she now starts working a couple of jobs. Because she wants to go to college and get a college degree, because she wants even more. She knows she can't get that much with a high school education. So now she's going to college at night, taking care of six boys, put three of us into college. Ralph, me, and Reggie, we're all put into college, first kids in our neighborhood to go to a college, you know, with her love and support. And now she graduates from college. She thought she was going to be a high school a teacher, but I think she was a TA in a class once, and them badass little kids. She said, "I've grown up with this, so I don't need this anymore." So, so she got a job for Prudential Insurance Company, you know, and she was great there. They loved her, just like everybody loves Marie White. Everybody loves my mother, and so now she's working for Prudential Insurance Company. She's doing all these things. She's an extraordinary example of the kind of model that I should be. Of course, you see us here in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And so it doesn't, like Bill said last night, it really doesn't matter what background you come from, how good your parentage is, no matter whether or not you come from an abused home or a great home. See, I needed to tell that part of my story, because you might have thought when I talked about having this alcoholic father and all this other kind of, oh, they're horrible. My mother took care of us. Even when we didn't have much money and stuff on Christmas, we couldn't wait for Christmas. We always got group gifts because there were six of us, so we always played together and stuff. We always got these big board games and stuff, so because she didn't have enough money to get a lot of individual things, and so we made sure we were a great close family. Even given all that, I still felt this separation internally. And so now, when it comes time to make amends, you can best believe that when my mother got that job for Prudential Insurance Company and they gave her a gold watch to commemorate her service, I stole that watch. From this loving mother who sacrificed everything for these six boys, my mother, as Ralph shared on Friday, she would have to come home with groceries underneath her arm, stuff them under her bed, and lock her bedroom door so that she would have something to eat. Because all of us were stealing the food out her refrigerator. And I have to say it's stealing, because just like Kent said, if you're in your mama's home, you're homeless. If you're not paying rent. And we weren't buying the groceries. They were her groceries. I stole her food out her refrigerator to cook plates for people around the neighborhood so I could get what I needed. Mama happened to have the temerity, the nerve, to wear the same size shoe as this girl around the corner who had what I needed, so I stole the shoes out my mother's closet. I thought I was very clever. I would go in the closet and I would try to look for some shoes that looked attractive enough, but not so attractive Mama would miss it. As I later grew to be an adult, what woman would miss any of her shoes? And I'm stealing the shoes out my mother's closet. The lawyer. So imagine when I get to step 9. First, step 8, just put my mama's name on the list, was daunting because I could not even imagine, how do I do this? How do you quantify? How can you even add up how much harm you've done over the course of a lifetime of heartache and heartbreak, of disappointment? And so I put her on the list, and I remember I was about 2.5 years sober when I sat down to make that amends to her. And I could not even, like I said, I couldn't even calculate how much I owed her. But believe me, when you go to make amends, as I had learned through the men and women that I had sat down with when we went through this book, when you go to make amends, make sure you're ready and make sure you're able. Because if you go in and you make a promise to do something and then you don't live up to it, you do more damage than if you have never gone in the first place. And so what I did was I calculated what I could do. And I told my mother, I sat down with her and I told her, Mama, I can't even imagine. And we sitting there and you know, when I told her, when I made the appointment and I told her I needed to make amends to her, that I needed to sit down and talk with her. And I told her, Mama, and we, you know, we prayed and we were holding hands. And when I told her that I didn't know how I could even imagine how much money I had taken from her, how much money I had cost her over the years, and I told her that I wanted to be able to pay her $200 a month for the next 2 years. I know it was probably much more than that, but that's what I could imagine that I could live up to. And I told her I would pay her $200 a month for the next 2 years because of all the harm I'd done to her. And Mama was saying, we crying. And then she says, Ronnie, you said, you don't have to do that. Son, I'm just so happy, so proud of you, how sober you are. That the fact that you're sober and you know, you don't have to do that. And, you know, internally I said, whew. You know. But externally, my lips said, trained by you guys, Mama, I need to do this. And I said it in a language she could understand. I said, I'm trying to get a relationship with God. I said, this is going to bring me closer to God. Mama understood that language. She said, okay. And so for the next 2 years, on a monthly basis, I got to bring my mother her money. Not my money, her money. And each time that I brought it, to see the look on her face, to be able to sit and talk with her, to be able to glean the side benefits of amends, I got to grow closer to my mother during the course of that next 2 years. Not that I wasn't close already, but every time, that was like a commitment. I know we in alcoholics understand commitments. And it allowed me the opportunity to have a spiritual experience every month, over and over and over again. And it allowed my mother to have a spiritual experience every time that I was able to do that. The amends process, that process of rebuilding broken hearts, broken dreams, broken relationships. It's an awesome process that I would have shortchanged myself, as I often do in my life, had I not said those words, Mama, I need to do this. If I accepted, I hear so many people say that, oh, well, yeah, somebody just told me it was just good enough that I'd be sober. That's not amends. Amends is righting the wrong, putting the person back into the position they were in as best I can prior to my harming them, and then affirming to them that you don't have to worry about me doing this ever again, that I'm going to be a better person. And is there anything else I can do for you? Uh-oh, I know a lot of people don't like saying that shit. And is there anything else? Is there anything else I can do for you? Because I don't know what's on the other side. See, in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it knows where I'm going. It knows that that's why it's step 9. That's not why it's step 3 or step 2. It knows I need some spiritual energy and some spiritual strength to carry that out. That's why it is where it is. Each step is designed to give me the spiritual fiber to do the next step. And so that's why they're in that order. You know, some people try to go out and do amends early, and I understand sometimes the opportunity is simply presented to you, and it don't care if you've just done your third step, if you've just done whatever. It might be somebody that you haven't seen for years. It might be somebody you're not going to see again. Talk to your sponsor. Talk to whoever it is you have to talk to, because you might have to just, you can't say, well, I'm not at the 9th step now. That person is there. You owe them the money. You've got the money. Talk to somebody, run it by them, do what you need to do. And so that was one of the most powerful amends that I had the opportunity to do. There was another amends that I had to do with a recovery home that I had been in 1985. Before I went to the Harbor Light Center, I kind of like glossed over that when I told you guys my story, that I had been into a recovery home twice in 1985 and relapsed. And one of the times that I relapsed, I had become the secretary of the AA meeting in the recovery home. You know, I'm the lawyer, so I'm the smart guy. So they elected me secretary and treasurer because I must be trustworthy, right? I'm a lawyer. What were they thinking? But And so I had the AA money, and I go on a pass, and I get loaded when I'm on the pass when I go home. I don't need to go home on no passes when I'm in a recovery home. I go home on a pass, I get loaded, I come back, I sneak back into the recovery home, you know, because I'm late now, I'm past curfew, and I climb the fence, and I go in, and I get the AA money that's in my room, and I climb back over the fence, and I go spend the AA money. And I never go back to that recovery home. And I was 8 years sober before that came up, because I didn't have a resentment against them or anything like that. And so their name didn't come up on the list. Don't go literally by what the Big Book says when it talks about how, yes, when you made that list, when you made your resentment list about making amends, there will be many people that you owe an amends to that you don't have a resentment against. Institutions, people, don't limit yourself to that and think you got off the hook if you don't have a resentment against them. Pray. When you make that 8-step list, you pray and you think about your life circumstances, your life situations, go back as far as you can remember. And so I made that list, and the main artery, that was the name of the facility, came on my list. I put main artery. And I went to the facility. Now, you know, this is 8 years later, so there's nobody there at the facility to remember me, because all the staff has changed and everything. And so I go back to the facility, and I'm making this amends. And I tell them that, you know, and the staff looks at me like I have two heads when I tell them I'm there to make an amends. Huh? All right, you know, because a lot of people that run the recovery homes aren't in the 12-step process. Recovery homes are separate from Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, many of them are align themselves with our fellowship, except, believe you me, that. And so I don't get it twisted. So I go back there, I tell them, the staff, what I'm there for, and they say, okay, well, we don't know you. We don't know. I said, are there some men here who run the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, the AA meeting here? And they said, well, yeah. So I asked them to have the secretary and the treasurer come up to the front office, and they came and they sat down with me, and I explained to them who I was, and I explained to them that I had been the person who had been in charge of the AA treasury 8 years before, and that I was there to make amends, and that I was here to right the wrong that I had done. And I had this, and I can't even remember what it was. It was, I think I may have stole. See, back when you were in the madness, it seemed like such a great amount of money, right? I think it was about $20-something or something. But I multiplied in my head over the years, you know, what that might. So I said, I've got $80, you know. And here I have this money to go. And they're sitting there, and their eyes are as big as saucers as they sit there and they watch Alcoholics Anonymous at work. They got to see what Alcoholics Anonymous is really about. And something about me changed. Not just them. You know, the amends process is really the end game, as they might say, is to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and my fellows. It's to clear away the things that might be blocking me from that kind of experience. If I owe bill collectors and stuff, I might not be answering my phone when a newcomer wants to call me because I'm trying to avoid the bill collectors. If I got warrants or something like that, I might be afraid to drive in a particular area or particular neighborhood when I need to make a 12-step call. I might not be able to go to work or do what I need to do to be a contributing member of my community if I have these things that are blocking me. If I have somebody in a meeting that I need to be at, but she's there. Somebody in here know what I'm talking about. And so I can't have these resentments. I can't have unfinished business. I can't have people whose lives I've trampled over and stuff. I can't go back into a household and, like the big book says, you know, when the guy comes out of the cyclone, well, look, Ma, the wind stopped blowing. Shit all tore up. But I think that just because I'm sober now, that's good enough. No, I need to start picking up the trash that I've left on the ground. I need to start building, rebuilding fences, painting things. I need to do whatever it takes for me to make things right. And so that's the kind of process this amends process is. And it'll go through the book. I had an experience when I was a public defender in L.A., and there was a guy from the program who came into the court. And he was going to make these, you know, he wanted to know, well, he has this warrant outstanding, and what can he do, you know, to and I told him, make one of these AA portfolios. And what that is get character letters and stuff from all of your friends and stuff, your people in AA. Get a letter from your sponsor. You went to a recovery home. Get a certificate. Get all of these things. Show the court how you've changed your life, right? And then he went back to make this amends, you know, because he knew that as long as he couldn't shrink at anything, like they say in the book, you know, and he had to go and he offered himself to the court. And the judge read the portfolio and he read those letters and he said, Mr. Jackson, this is so impressive. I am so proud of you. Bailiff, take him into custody. And he said, you know, he said, for the violation of your probation, Mr. Jackson, I'm sentencing you to 16 months in the state prison. Clang. And I walk into the back, and the guy's looking at me with this bewilderment on his face, and he's saying, you told me that everything was going to be all right. You told me that all I needed to do was do this and stuff. Why'd you lie to me? And he doesn't know that I simply told him, I said, Mr. Jackson, this judge normally gives guys the max. He normally gives them 3 years. And he gave you 16 months. Now, that didn't harden him at the time. But I saw this guy 8 months later, because they do half the time, and then he gets paroled. He did 8 months, and he showed up in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he came up to me, and he says, Ronald, thank you. He said, thank you, because while I was in prison, I was able to talk to people and go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous in prison. And he said, and I told them about how I was with this judge who normally gives people 3 years, and all I got was 16 months, and how the program works. And he was able to share that in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous after he got out. Now, the amends process, it says in there, 9 times out of 10, the unexpected happens. Well, the unexpected is not always good. In the immediate sense, you know, but we have a saying, you know, I'm asking for mercy, not justice. Because if I got justice, if I got what I really deserved, see, and sometimes we get what we deserve. Unfortunately, sometimes we get what we deserve. I've always gone around, somehow, when I first got in Alcoholics Anonymous, I had this pink cloud over my head, and I thought that, you know, now that I'm sober, nothing's going to happen to me. Right? Now, I mean, I thought every time I'm participating in the 50-50 raffle, I'm going to win. You know, at the dance, I'm going to do, you know, because I'm a good AA member and I'm this, that, and the other. And I just knew that nothing but good was going to come. Rain was never going to fall on me, that I was going to. What I've learned is I fit myself to be of maximum service to God and my fellows because things are going to happen to me. Not because things aren't going to happen to me, because they are. And I need to be the one, as I said on Friday, I need to be that one that says in the book, early on it said, for if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through strenuous work and self-sacrifice for others, then he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. Not the uncertain trials and low spots, the certain trials and low spots ahead. That's what I'm doing. I'm fitting myself to be of maximum service. Because I'm going to have trials and I'm going to have low spots that I will be unable to survive if I have not connected with you and the power. And I say with you and the power because God has never, Ronald, stop doing that. No, I hear it through Bill Cleveland. I hear it through Kent Coleman. I hear it through all of you, through Aaron. I hear it through my fellow trudgers, that's who I hear God's message through. It's amazing how when you can't hear it coming from yourself, but when it comes from somebody else, it sounds so clear. And when I'm working with others, don't you feel kind of smart when you work with others? Seem like the shit that you say makes more sense, right? When I'm talking to somebody, I think, why can't I follow this shit, right? Am I the only one, right? Just brilliant, you know. Bill was talking about, I've got these broken relationships that I've got, and people coming to me asking me for advice, and I give it, right? Now, I try to stick within my life experience, and I try to tell people where they can go for somebody who's had that experience, except that's in and of itself amazing, the fact that I can do that. That I don't try to give advice or whatever it might be, suggestions in areas that I'm not experienced in, that I have no knowledge in. So I do the best that I can. I'm talking to a guy on the phone, Ryan, one of my sponsees who moved away from L.A. up to the Bay Area. And he's going through some stuff, and I'm going through some stuff. And then Ryan calls me up, and I don't even know why he called me up. I just start talking. You know, and I'm telling him because I feel this bond, this trust that we've built over time, that a sponsor and a sponsee gain over the course of time, that I feel like I can share with him what I need to share. Funny how that happens. Stuff that I normally would sit on, that I would just fester in, things that I would isolate up here, because believe you me, in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, the longer that I stay here, that my blessings can become my curses. That the very things that I came in here trying to reduce, ego, I gain from you guys loving me so much. that now my reputation becomes much more important than me telling you how I done screwed up. Anybody ever been in that place? And so I understand that the characteristics that I gain, this humbling process, this process through the fifth step, through the ninth step, these things that I learn how to tell on myself, these things I learn how to say things that I normally wouldn't do, acts contrary to the will. That's what these things are. My will says, I don't want to do that. Do it anyway. Just do it. The fifth step, the ninth step. And then in the tenth step, I continue to take inventory on a daily basis so that I don't have to let that garbage continue to pile up. I will never be the kind of guy, I don't think, that doesn't have to. I hear some people say, well, I've done a fourth step and that's it, you know. They write one fourth step and that, well, my mama raised us to do spring cleaning. You know how when all the mops come out and the rags and the sponges and all that, and you got to wash the walls. I don't know if anybody ever had to go through that, where you have to wash the wall. A lot of the youngsters looking, wash the wall. They've got modern contrivances, I guess, that where you don't have to do it. Well, we put some elbow grease to it, right? You know, we had to clean the whole. That's the way my life is. That no matter how on a daily basis I try to keep things clean, things pile up. And I heard, I think it was Kathleen say something about more will be revealed. Because then as I'm doing this stuff, things from the past pop up that I need to inventory. It's not that daily, it's stuff that I've been holding on to, like that Bruce Billingsley stuff. Right? And I need to write about that and share about it with somebody. And so I do annually a fourth step. And so that I know that I have to do this. And so the 10th step keeps that list as short as possible, though. If I continue to do that 10th step, nightly review. You know, and I get up in the morning, and now we're to step 11. And I'm only going to go through these quick because Ralph will cover a lot of this stuff. And I know that if I do this nightly review and if I do this daily meditation, and I align my prayers so that God's will be done, not mine. I've always had this Santa Claus kind of God where I've always wanted to get on my knees and I'll ask God, please bless my mama, bless my brothers, bless this, bless that. Let me be able to get this. Let me be able to get that. I've been a good boy, that God. I've been trying to do your will. Please, please, please. And I'm begging again. And I need to, God, thy will, not mine, be done. God, let me be the best person I can be today. Let me go ahead and try to carry your will in all my activities today. Let me, whatever wording that you might want to say, however you want to do it, there are many books, there's many other kinds of things out there in which prayer is outlined in many ways that we can utilize successfully. Where am I at with my time? I want to end what I'm saying this morning by just letting you guys know that I love Alcoholics Anonymous. If you don't know that yet, you're blind. Okay. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe this is a life-changing, life-affirming movement that, you know, I sometimes hear, I used to say, I'm a blessed alcoholic. Ooh, I hate that. I'm a blessed alcoholic. I used to hate that. Because I, you know, there's certain spiritual terms and what I don't know why certain things irk me, and I'm so glad for the chapter We Agnostics, because I have to question myself, I have to ask myself, why does that bother me? Do I feel blessed? Yes. Do I the outward expressions sometimes annoy me or do whatever? Except guess what? I just need to ask myself, why does this bother me? I don't know. Because I do feel blessed. I do feel grateful that. Because of my alcoholism, because of the fact that I had that stuff whoop my ass so bad that I came to my knees on July the 14th of 1986, and it allows me on July the 6th of 2014 to be standing in Nashville, Tennessee. Imagine that, right? A little boy from South Central Los Angeles standing in Nashville, Tennessee, talking to my people.
Jimmy, you gonna give me time? My name is Ralph White. I'm an alcoholic. I was cool as far as finishing up today. And then Mr. C had to go last night and turn on my head a lot of things that I thought I believed. I'm hungry. I'm still hungry. I'm still wide open. I'm still not an infant on the spiritual path, but I still feel like I'm pretty juvenile on this spiritual path. And the longer I do the deal, the less certainty I bring to the deal. I don't know if anybody understands that. You know, when you first go into the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and you get excited about it, right? You get on fire about it. You know, we had the three legacies in our program, unity, recovery, and service. And first, you might be on fire for going to meetings, the unity part. And that was me. Love going to meetings. Bill said it last night, too. I was fortunate. You know, some folk, when you heard Deb's story, she was going for like 4 months just going and getting in the big, you know, LTD that showed up in the driveway. I'm going to get in the car and I'm just going, you know, and then it grows on you. Some of us get fortunate, can't take credit for it. I'm like Bill. When I landed here, I just loved it immediately. I just did. You hear Clancy's story and he's, but I just did. You know, the book, when it talks about folk like us, it says here were people worldly indeed. So here are people. And I know, you know, and that's why don't trip, you know, don't trip and be too rigid in what I think I believe a meeting should look like, because I'm not the only person in attendance. So when I'm there, when I've been around a long time or a considerable period of time like me, I want to clean up everything about the meeting. I want it to be really sanitized. I was with somebody one time and some people were sitting around talking and said, wouldn't it be great to go to a meeting where everybody is practicing 10, 11, 12? Wouldn't it be great to go to a meeting where everybody, and I was like, that would be kind of like being in a hospital with nothing but doctors. I want to be in the emergency room. I want to be where they're bringing them up in there. You know, that's what we're here for. Somebody talked about going to a meeting. I want to go to a meeting and let's eliminate the riffraff. Hell, we are the riffraff. What the hell are you talking about? Hell are you talking about, dude? You know, and so people get confused when you be one of these people to go around talking, and they get that confused and think, at least when it come to me and the people that I really like and the people that I gravitate to, you know, I want to get my hands dirty. I like that. And so, you know, sometimes old times, listen to that language, but you don't realize and don't remember. That's why I say that to myself. I said to myself, because one of the things that was so attractive to me when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous and was so appealing to me was to hear somebody talk about God and be cussing in the same sentence. I was like, oh, my God, that's my people. You know, because I'm not, who was saying it, Kathleen, maybe yesterday, I'm not a thee and thou God. I'm not the thee and thou God. You know, I liked it. I liked it like it, that, you know, bring it to me in words I can understand. So, you know, and as I get on this path, you know, what it is we're talking about, you know, is real life with real people. When you get on fire for that book sometimes, you know, and that's why I'm love to have the sponsor I have. My sponsor always talks about the book is not the treasure. The book is the map. The book is the map. It's not the treasure. Because a guy like me can get armed, you know, and it talks about armed with facts about myself, but I can get armed with facts about this book, and I can use it as a weapon instead of a tool. I know the guy. I know the book. You can't tell me nothing. What are you up there talking about? That ain't what it say in the book. You know, and I get like that, and this ego reduction deal That's the whole deal with the 12 steps, this ego reduction series of activities, you know, and actions. You know, I use them for exactly what they're not supposed to be, ego inflation. And coming out the end of nine, I'm coming out looking like I should. I'm puffed up and I'm big and it's easy to rest on your laurels. And that's what that talks about. You know, yeah, I got this. I got this. So when I'm prepared, when I come out of that, when I come out of that, the series of ego-reducing exercises, because this is real life. It's real life. It's not by the numbers. You know, when I sponsor people and when I work with people, I don't work with everybody the same way. This is not by the numbers, because God doesn't produce us by the numbers. God's kids are not by the numbers. Sometimes, like Ronnie said, you know, yeah, we talk about doing this deal, you know, in order. But every now and then, you know, when you talk about a man, sometimes they come calling on you. It don't matter whether you at step nine. If the IRS come calling, and you know, they ain't asking you, are you at step nine when they sent that garnishment notice to my office. It wasn't like, what step you on? So I would suggest those of you who have creditors and they have the means to come at you, start answering them letters and start answering them calls and start making arrangements. Whether you at step nine, talk to your sponsor, get with some people, because sometimes the amends visit you, you know. So this is life we're talking about. We're not talking about painting. We're not talking about, we're talking about real life with real people. We're talking about real parents and real kids. Sometime when you're sitting up in that house and it's about to explode and it's a powder keg, sometime you got to address it right then. Now, you might have to address it more formally later on when you get the when you have enough of the spiritual impetus, you know. But every now and then there are things that have to be addressed. So when we talk about this process, I love the process of recovery. I love this program you guys introduced me to. And like I said, I fell in love with this deal. And then, you know, so sometime down the road, you know, I got on the other side of that triangle and I got introduced to the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And like most of us who get introduced to it, you know, there are some phases. And those phases, you know, we think that we're the first one. And like most folks, especially, you know, history start when I got here, of course. Of course, history started with me, you know, and folk want to act like, that's why you'll hear people say, when Kent said it, you know, all of us hear it. I hear people that are my contemporaries, and they get up and say, people wasn't talking about the book when I first came. People were telling me to, and I was like, I was here when you first came. No, they wasn't. I wasn't saying that to you. One of the most common themes to say, and Kent said it, I loved it. They were telling me, sit down, shut up, and listen. People say that all the time from podiums. I've never heard a member of Alcoholics Anonymous come and say that to me. I've never heard it. I've never heard it. Now, I was at my home group. I was at my home group, and my home group was a hard home group, 9604 South Figueroa. And I'm leading the meeting. You guys, I don't know, you guys call that a chair or something, I don't know, but we have a leader. And the leader's job is to maybe share for 3 to 5 minutes, and then he picks out other members. It was a discussion meeting, and he picks out other members. Well, I'm about 9 months sober, and in them 9 months, I'm giving you my whole why. I'm giving it to you, and I had about 20 minutes worth, you know, and I'm into it. I'm about 13, 15 minutes in. I'm supposed to be 3 to 5. And I'm giving you my best. If you don't drink, you don't get drunk. Feelings ain't facts. You know, I'm throwing out all the stuff I've accumulated. You know how we be doing when you're new. I'm 9 months in and I'm just, ooh, and I'm giving it. And old timers are like, yeah, the old boy's on fire, all right, you know. You know, when you knew the stuff that you guys are doing, it's brand new stuff to us. And it's like, it is the most, I mean, it's the wisdom of the ages. And I'm like, I'm giving it up. And an old timer who was there, and he just stood up at the back of the room. This ain't no speaker meeting. Brought me to my knees. You know, I'm like, oh, shit. So I didn't get to sit down, shut up, and listen, but I got this ain't no speaker. And I just whoop, because, you know, one thing when I did come up, and I still do it, I do it to this day. Part of it is the way I was raised. My mom, Ronnie, gave you a brilliant description of her. We respect our elders, and I brought that to Alcoholics Anonymous. I am so respectful of the men and women who kept the light on for a drunk like me. And if you come from my home group, now that's the virtuous spin. If you come from my home group and you try not to respect them, oh, you going to learn to respect them. And Cleo wasn't playing, you know, because the old timers is my home group. Not only did they didn't mind stepping out in the parking lot. They didn't mind that either. So I was like, okay, let me. And I sat down and I was so embarrassed. I was so embarrassed. You know, and I was so humiliated. And then folk who thought they were doing me a favor at the end of the meeting were meeting me in the back of the room. Oh, Ralph, don't worry. And then that made it worse because I'm like, oh, they did pay attention to it. You know, everybody does know I'm not going back. But valuable lessons for me because I'm such an ego guy. And I'm such a what you think about me guy. And I'm such a I'm a slink away and never show up there again. But what came to me when I was back at 96 that evening, because that was a noon meeting. I was back there at 8:30 for our 8:30 meeting. Something had happened to me that there was a seat in Alcoholics Anonymous for me. And it didn't matter. Embarrassment. Shame and the rest, something. I had turned the corner and I was with you guys. I was with you guys. And so I embarked on that, and then I got into this book thing, and we go through the phases in the book where now you on fire and you quoting it and you know and you knowing it and you can start thinking that the book is the deal, you know. And the thing about that is, and it is to an extent. But if knowledge of this is the deal, that's a self-determined objective. If I could get smarter, that's human power. If I know it better, that's human power. If I write better inventory, that's human power. That's human power. I'm delusional with that. So the purpose of that thing right there, which was written by the hands of some men and women, is to put me in touch with real power. And there's real power. There is a power. Bill talked about it a lot last night. And that's what it is that I'm after. So I get propelled into that stuff, and I start doing these series of activities, and stuff starts happening to me, sometimes unintended stuff, unintended consequences that I don't even know I'm getting. You know, I didn't talk about some of this. Ronnie went through them, and I'm not going to rehash them, but, you know, some of them I just like to talk about the way this deal works in concert, because it's not a discrete series of separate activities. Sometimes people will say, what step are you on? And that always kind of rankles me, because alcohol, you don't live your life step by step. It's an integrated series of activities. I'm always on, you know, step one, I'm powerless over alcohol. I believe my life is unmanageable. That one is in me. It's imbued. It's inbred. I don't work it from time to time. It's kind of like I suspect I'm black and I'm always be that way. You know, I suspect I'm alcoholic. I'm always be foundational. Don't even have to go back there. You know, step two, you know, conclusion I drew, don't move off of it. Some folk talk about they do step three. They turn it over. They take it back. They turn over and take it. I don't know nothing about, you know, I'm not big enough to take nothing back from this power. But if I turn it over, take it back, turn it over, take it back, it's because I ain't followed up with the rest of the stuff, because it can have little permanent effect unless it once followed by that. You know, so, yeah. I ain't never done the turning it over, because I don't turn it over. 4 through 9 will turn it over for me. I just do the rest of the stuff. You know, but yeah, if you ain't done none of the rest of it, it ain't gonna have no permanent effect. I got on my knees and that was a good thing, but that was pretty much it. So now I do the rest of this stuff. And so how do you, when you say I'm on 6 and 7, how does that look? How's that look? The 6 and the 7 step, they're not, they're not actions and activities, because if they were, it wouldn't talk about I'm asking God to remove this from me. Oh, you know, when you have how many people have ever had a defective car? Not a car that's a bucket. I've had many cars that have problems. But how many people have had cars that the manufacturer realizes they sold you and it's got a problem? It's got a defect. What happens when you get that letter? What happens? They say return it where? To the manufacturer. Defective merchandise, return to the manufacturer. Why? Because the car don't work on itself. Car don't work on itself. As defective, we don't work. I can't work on myself. I don't work on my defects. I don't work on my defects. Return to the manufacturer. Return to the manufacturer. You know, and so the six and seven step is not so much what do I do with them, you know, it's how do I position myself? What's the attitude I present? It's a presentation. That deal right there, you know, because the thing about defects and defects of character and the seven step, I love it. Remove from me every single defect of character that stands in the way of my usefulness. And I think it's fluid. I believe it's fluid. I believe it's fluid. Because there are some defects that have no value to me sometime, and in other situations, they have a lot of value to me. How I think I look, that is a big defect of mine. And when it causes me to lie to you, you know, sometimes people would come up to me, ain't you a lawyer? Because they knew Ronnie. And I ain't no goddamn lawyer. But I had always intended to be all my life. I was supposed to be the first one, scored high enough, ace, LSAT, all that. But I was already in the life. Staggered out of school, undergrad, barely made it, and didn't. Okay, I'm going to go back when I get there. And that's always been one of the ones that's been on the regret list when they talk about it. And so I'll claim it something, you know. Yeah. So that need to look good and the rest of it, that's a hell of a defect in those areas. But I got something that sometimes, I was talking to Steve Lee about the deal, you know, he's the speaker chair. I put on a deal in Los Angeles right now, and Bill was there, you know, we had a hell of a deal. And that need to look good, you know, requires me to make sure that it's got my name attached to it, it's going to be right. And that defect right there in that area, you know, God works with that. You know, God works with that. I remember one of the things that was a big defect of mine, and it's a common one. And, you know, this is just a small one, fellas, the red coats. I'm going to talk to you guys for a minute, the red shirts. You know, one of the things when God worked with a defect, you know, we know don't none of y'all go to meetings to look at the girls, but just hypothetically, you know. One of the biggest ways God worked with us in our defects. And I think that's why we don't just have men and women stags. One of the defects for all of us, you know, especially when you come from the life, especially when you come from places me and you come from where we wasn't hanging in the company of ladies. And we start going to meetings and we were in the company of ladies. And you smell good and you look good. And goddamn right, we're looking. And that's one of the defects we have. But God works through that defect, because I was following a couple of girls to meetings. And when I got to the meeting to look at the girls, I sat in the meeting to listen to the men. Working through the defects. Take every single defect of character, except, you know, except when they stand away. So that, you know, that deal. But the way that I present to six and seven is more than. So don't be working on your defects. Yeah, okay. I'm working on mine too. Strengthening them. Anytime I'm working on them, yeah, I lie better. I'm polishing up my lying skills. That's what working on defects means, you know. Just so you know. And so then Ronnie talked about the 8 and 9 step, you know, and I love, but this process, unintended consequences, well, I'm going to work backwards, and I'm just going through really quickly the way the 12-step process looks in real life. You know, when I did a 4th and 5th step, one of the things that I discovered, I digested some big chunks of truth about myself, and now I look forward to them. Some people will be scared and they'll sound intimidating. And some folk intentionally make it sound intimidating, because if it's intimidating and I've done it, then it adds some extra luster to me. Yeah, I've done some hard, you know, I've done some heavy lifting. It ain't intimidating. Bill's, when, I love when Bill talked about it. One of the reasons I like looking and doing a four step, shit, this is my favorite subject, me. You're writing about your favorite subject. You're going to learn some stuff. And the intent of the fourth and the fifth is not to see what I already know about myself. That's why we don't write out a biography. It's to disclose some things to me that I don't know about myself that actually have been driving me, have been running me, the fabric of my existence. I don't know that's what it is that I've always been running on, my belief system, what I think I need to be okay. One of the reasons resentments are so powerful and that we have to look at them so much is I think they work for me. I think they're my protection. I think that they would. I need in order for me to keep you off of me. I think if I give you an inch, you'll take a mile, and if I don't take care of me, who will? And that, and so I build these fences, and I erect these fences, and before I know it, the fences I erect to keep you out are the ones that are keeping me in. And when I feel imprisoned, the bondage of self, I wonder why, and I look up, and it's because I've done it. Having a resentment is sometimes like putting you in prison, but I got to stand guard. Cold place to be. And so we start getting free of that, and there's a process of that, and Ronnie talked about it. And coming out that process of that, you know, writing a fourth step. Has anybody ever wrote a fourth step and not did a fifth? Anybody in there ever did that? You know, don't do that one. Don't do that one. Don't do that one. I've done it before, too, you know. I've done this fourth. I've written all this down. Now I can't share it with nobody. And that's a cold thing. You know, I always wonder, why would you do that? You know, because writing a fourth step is a lot of work. Writing the fourth step and not doing a fifth is like having sex and not coming. Why are you going to do the... Don't do the work and not get the benefits. Why are you going to do the work and not get the benefit? Do the fifth. I always like that because them guys back there, the new guys, ooh, I want to do a fifth now. Yeah, it's just like that. It's just like that. It's just like that. Tell your sponsees, it's just like that. Taking a fifth step is just like having sex. Yeah. And then it's some unintended consequences. Unintended consequences. Not only do I discover some truths about myself, and now I get some freedom that I didn't know was there. And check this out. Some other stuff happens. I forge a bond with my sponsor that's a little bit closer. Where the sponsors at this up in here? You know, check this out. I guarantee you, out of all the hands that went up, probably at least 80%, if not all the 100%, will tell you every time a sponsor listens to a fifth, they do a little mini fifth too. Especially when it's the first one. Sometime with some of your veterans, you know. But when it's a first one or a second one, you find out in order to ease them up, you do a fifth with them. And it forges a bond, unintended. And then when you finish that fourth and that fifth step, here's the unintended consequence. Ronnie shared a little bit about it. Not only do I get the benefits of that step, but for one of the first times, I feel like I'm a member. Now, I feel like I'm a member of AA already, but I feel like I'm a member in good standing in recovery. See, the thing, you know, the only requirement for membership, our third tradition, is the desire to stop. But that ain't the only requirement for recovery. I feel like I'm in I'm working the step because it's the first tangible. You can see when you do a third step, you can do it with some people, you can hear it out your mouth. But the first tangible evidence that I'm doing this damn thing, that I'm committed to my own recovery, I'm committed to doing something about my life. I'm on the big boy, big girl path. I'm on the grown folk. I'm committed to doing so, and it's the first tangible evidence, and I feel like I'm a member. Unintended consequence. I feel like I'm a member, and I come out of there, and I start embarking on the rest of this, then the men from the boys, then I get in the ninth step. The residue of the fourth, sometimes you be writing and writing, and you say, how come people keep coming up on my fourth step? How come people keep coming up on my fourth step? The residue of the fourth is in the ninth. Bill talked about that last night. If you really want to be free of a resentment, make amends. Then, particularly when you say, oh, hell no, I ain't going to never do that. That's the one. That's the one. And the price for that one is Do I want to be right or do I want to be free? And how much do I want to be free? Am I after relief or am I after freedom? Relief is comes as soon as I get through drinking. That's cool. Relief is fine. There's a lot of people in here for relief. Don't trip off that. Sponsors, don't worry about that. But are you a player in the game? My sponsor always talks about the sponsors recognize the people that's players. I don't deal with, you know, Kent said it. It's one of my favorite answers. About how many people you sponsor? About half of them. And I don't feel it. It don't trip me out. I don't get mad. You know, I don't get mad. If you have a team, you need people that's going to be sitting on the bench. You know, you need people that's going to do that. But you know who the players are. You know who the players are. You know who the players are. You know the ones who want to be able to stand up. You know, I got, I had two daughters. And I always wanted to be the man my daddy wasn't. I always wanted my girls to look at me like men I've seen in the fellowship. Like, this is my daddy. This is my hero. You know, me and Kent talk about all that. He got two girls. And my girls are daddy's girls. Daddy's girls. They look at me like that. Somewhere in the process, somewhere in the transaction, somewhere in the ongoing conversation I've kept with you guys, somewhere on the line, something's happened to this guy. When I got on my knees and said, God, do something with him. I'm giving it all to you. I'm all in. Something happened in the transaction. And there's two girls back in Los Angeles that's got a man that they look at. And I don't know why they see him as the rock. I don't know why they see him as the, because I know who I am. But you guys have done something. So if you want to be players in your life, you know, I got a 19-year-old daughter at home that's never seen her daddy loaded, and one day at a time she never will. She's a sophomore at Boston University when she goes back. And we'll be flying back on August the 29th, and she'll get her first apartment. And, of course, daddy's going back, and we're going to move her because that's what you guys have done. And my other girl, whose piggy bank I used to go in when she was two, she's 31, you know. And anybody that want to look, she just gave me my first grandson. He's seven weeks old, you know. And, that daughter's a practicing attorney in the state of California. Got married not too long ago, you know, and so that's what it is. And when I came to you, I wanted to learn how not to spend a whole paycheck every 2 weeks. And I was hoping to get my ex-old lady back. And you did something with me. And so I go through this process, this restorative process, this ego-reducing process. And then we get to that 10th step that Ronnie was talking about, come out of the nine, start cleaning up the wreckage of my past. And then I start living, moving forward. You know, I'm like Bill. I'm not talking about these being maintenance. No. You know, this ongoing way that I live my life. Now I have a blueprint for the way I live my life. I've done these 1 through 9. So now it's an integrated way of keeping the deal going. So, you know, so it's some things I do in the 10, and it's some first thing I do, you know, I'm watching, you know, and I'm watching me, you know, it's vigilance, and, you know, watch for selfishness, resentment, you know, fear, dishonesty. Watch for that, Ralph. And when, not if, we know your ass, yeah, you done 9 steps, but still, you Ralph, you know, when these crop up. Oh, okay, why you got to go there? Okay, Mr. Smartby, we're going to say it again. When these crop up, you know, so when these hop up, what you do, you know, you discuss them with somebody. So first you watch, you ask God to remove them. They discuss, you discuss them with somebody. You make amends, you know, and then you resolutely, then you do what it is that we do at every single other step. It's the thing that's our saving grace. It's the thing we do better than anybody, and it's the thing that we do most. You resolutely turn your attention to somebody you can help. That's the one. In sex inventory, if sex is particularly troublesome, what do we do? look for one another. Every time, anywhere you go, everything we look at, it continues to talk about that. Our constant, thought of others, I won't be able to survive a certain trials and low spots, unless I'm constantly looking out for you. So throughout every step that we have, that's the running theme. That's what it is we do. So I'm watching and I'm looking and there are some hell of a 10-step promises. For by now we recoil, and cease fight. And that's my experience. That's my experience. I don't keep myself sober. I always hear people say that staying sober is the hardest thing. That's the easiest thing I've done in recovery. I ain't never woke up and thought about keeping out on white knuckle. God took the taste out of my mouth. He took the taste out of my mouth. I'm like Bill, it ain't a choice of mine. Because I didn't choose to not have the taste. I didn't choose to wake up without the obsession this morning. Absent the obsession, it feels like I have a choice. But the thing is, I didn't choose the obsession to be. God did grace. That's grace. And so that would give me the delusion that I get to choose. Let the obsession come visiting my ass. Now, I've heard members say that they've had obsessions and still haven't had the drink. I can't comment on that because I haven't had the obsession. Anytime I've had the obsession to get low, I'm loaded. I haven't had it. God has done what he did with his boy, and he did it real well. Understand we talk about causes and conditions. I came close to drinking one time in my recovery. One time. 7 years sober. On a trial in Palm Springs, which is 2 hours from where we live in L.A. Big trial. I was at a big firm. I'm the paralegal on that firm. And, when you go out of town on the trial, you set up a war room in a hotel. And we were in a hotel, and we won the trial the first day on this motion without going and all that. But we won the trial, and Disney was our client. And so we're sitting in this. That day in court, we were in this hotel room. Seven people in a circle, three partners from my firm, the lead counsel from the Disney company, a vice president from the Disney company, his paralegal, and me. And we're standing in a circle, and he pulls out a bottle of Dom Perignon. I'm 7 years sober. Ain't never tasted Dom Perignon. And it's a tight circle. I don't want to drink, but I'm close. That's the coldest thing. I'm close to drinking and don't want to drink with everything in me. Now, I'm not a slogan guy, but I am. Sometimes, I don't know what's going to be of value to me till it's of value to me. So it's easy when you're a book guy to demean the slogans. I don't drink and use no matter what. I would say that I do drink and use no matter what. But I don't live. The slogan ain't my program of recovery. But it is who I've become. I'm standing in that circle, and it was going through my head. I don't drink and use no matter what. I don't get low. And that's cold because in the 60s and the 70s, I used to be. I'm a get high, but now I'm transformed. And I'm like, I don't do that. I don't get low. I don't get low. And the power of the power. And something gave me enough. Because remember, I'm the what I think about you, what you think about me, guy. And they're gonna think, what's wrong with him? He's inappropriate. He's not. And I stepped out of the circle. I don't know what gave me enough, but I do know what gave me enough. Stepped out of the circle, excuse me, went to the sink, put some water in my glass, came back to the circle. They poured Dom Perignon. We toasted. Now, don't think that when you make the right decision, it's going to always feel comfortable. I felt extremely uncomfortable for that minute in the circle. But I've been comfortable for the last 20-something plus years after that, And so I get to meandering, and now I better get to 12, and I'm just going to skip right through 11, because, so now step 11, Ronnie talked about his prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact. Conscious contact is a hell of a thing for a guy like me. It's the ultimate. It's what we look for. It's what we seek, And to have a life that you guys has given me, I graduate to the highest calling in Alcoholics Anonymous. Three phases of my prayer life, three phases of my, recovery life. Phase one, help me. Almost all of us got here on a variation of that prayer. Phase two, give me, grant me strength. Phase three, use me. Highest use me. And I've been a use in Alcoholics Anonymous. And having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. What do you do with your woke up spirit? What do you do when your spirit wakes up? What do you do with an awakened spirit? You put it in the service. And that's our 12th step. And you start working with others, working with others, working with others, working with others, working with others. Practical experience shows that when all other activities fail, nothing ensures immunity from drinking as much as intensive work with another alcoholic. This is our 12th suggestion. And so when you're working with others, since practical experience shows nothing gives me immunity, that's my immune system. That's my immune system. If your ass ain't working with others, you walking around with spiritual AIDS. That's my immune system. Practical experience shows nothing ensures immunity from drinking. And here's the deal, ladies and gents. You know, when you be sponsoring and you be wanting to fire people, I don't get into all that. You know, I'm firing somebody because they ain't doing what I'm... Well, if they ain't doing what I'm telling them, they ain't bothering me. Why I gotta be standing in the gap for when they ready. Stand in the gap for when they ready. You might spoil an opportunity to be used. That's just me. I'm giving opinion, but shit, you gonna get my opinion when I'm up here, you know? I'm not scared to stand on opinion. That's the way I do it. I ain't firing people. I ain't getting rid of people. You know, and you know the practical experience. So you know, I don't understand that piece. Cause check this out. Folk be thinking I'm not gonna waste my time. I'm not. We don't work with others to get them sober. We work with others so we stay sober. When you step to me, it's a privilege. When you step to me, you my lifeblood. When you step to me, you my immune system. When you step to me, you remind me of where it is that I come from. When you step to me, you make me grateful. When you step to me, you make this brother feel useful. I've lost all my money in recovery. I've lost the house. I've lost the marriage. I've lost stuff in front of everybody. You know, I've walked through situations, and I got a power in my life, a power that allows me to stand on my own two feet. Sometimes that's the best it's going to get in Alcoholics Anonymous. In Alcoholics Anonymous, sometime what we are is the cut man. I don't know, ladies, you may not know, but some of the guys in here might be fight fans. You know, and sometimes the fighter is just, it ain't bad to take a knee sometimes. You take a knee, you go to the corner, we stitch you up, we patch you up, and we throw you back out there, goddammit. That's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous, and we stand, and we stand, and we walk, and we walk, and we walk. And we walk. You know, everybody in here might have a dark place they go to sometime. Everybody in here might get something that it just seemed like it's a little too much on my plate right now. Ain't it great to have a fellowship like ours? Everybody don't have a place like this to go to. And I can tell you from my own experience, I've had times when you guys have carried me. I've had times when my sponsees have carried me. I've had times when I have had to just rely totally on what it is that I've gotten from the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'm one of the ones that stays grateful. I'm one of the ones that stays plugged in. You know, I had the opportunity to ask Tom I some years ago, and I don't know if I asked him or if I heard him on a panel. They said, what's the most important thing you found in your 50-some-odd years of recovery? And he didn't say a conscious contact with God. He said one word, enthusiasm. Enthusiasm. You know, that's one reason I like Nashville, Tennessee, and I like the Music City Roundup, because you guys have that in abundance. If it's supposed to be a program of attraction, goddammit, let's make it attractive. My name is Ralph White. I'm an alcoholic.